Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Bullying at school is an age-old problem, one that's mostly ignored. But one woman who was herself bullied all through childhood has written about her experiences and how she coped. Now in a new book, she describes why bullying can be so emotionally destructive. She offers advice for parents, teachers, and children on putting a stop to bullying behavior. The book is titled, Please Stop Laughing at Us. Author and activist Jody Blanco joins me in the studio to talk about bullying and how to help both bullies and their victims. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Jody Blanco, it's good to have you here.
It's an honor to be here with you, Diane.
Thank you. You first wrote a book titled Please Stop Laughing at Me.
Correct.
Talking about your own personal experiences.
Right.
Being bullied all through school. When did that begin and how do you recall it began?
Well, it started in fifth grade and it continued to the end of high school. And I was singled out for the same reason that so many other kids are singled out today. I was simply different. And what I've learned in these last 6 years working deep inside America's schools, and even what I knew as a victim even back then, is that there's a profile to the bully child in America, and I fit that profile to a T.
How so?
I describe it as the ancient child, an old soul trapped in a young body. And you know the kid. This is the child who adults say of him, oh, he interfaces much better with adults than kids. This is the kid who wants to fit in just as desperately as everybody else. But he has like this little inner adult that won't let him make fun of the chubby girl. I mean, I remember when I was in school, we were in sort of a rural suburban area, and certain times of the year, the hallways at school would have crickets. And there would be this group of kids who were very popular. I call the mean popular kids elite tormentors and the caring popular kids elite leaders. Well, there was a group of elite tormentors in the hallway, and every day they would have this competition to see who could stomp on the most crickets first. And I would run around the hall, scooping these crickets up into the palm of my hand and taking them outside. Now, that kind of compassion is a great quality when you're an adult, but kids saw me as weird. And now I've become the voice of America's bullied students because we are typically the sensitive kids. Usually we have better vocabularies because we read more, because we enjoy our solitude more. And we want to fit in. We want you to invite us to your parties. We want you to ask us to hang out with you at the mall. But we're just too different in your eyes to inspire you to do that.
How did the bullying begin?
Well, it started out the way most bullying starts out, with the exclusion. And then it soon escalated. And the reason it escalated, and I think this is really important for parents to know, my parents told me, and they loved me, but they were clueless. And they told me, Jody, just ignore the mean kids and they'll go away. Just ignore them and walk away. So that's exactly what I did. And it's the worst advice you can give a kid.
Why?
Because number one, it's a mixed message. We tell kids everywhere, if somebody's being made fun of, stand up for that person. But if you're the one being picked on, ignore it. And secondly, It's enforcing adult logic in a teen circumstance. In the adult world, Diane, if somebody at the station is trying to annoy you on purpose and you ignore it, they probably will stop. But in the world of kids, all it does is make the mean ones try that much harder to get your goat. So I kept ignoring these kids who were making fun of me and slamming me into lockers and telling me I should have been a miscarriage so they wouldn't have to look at me. I kept ignoring them like my parents told me to do. And the more I ignored them, the meaner they got, because the harder they tried, the more they were determined to get a rise out of me.
Give me some examples of the way in which you were tormented as it escalated.
Well, I was always a real fighter for the underdog. And if I saw someone getting made fun of, I'd defend them. And I remember one day in seventh grade, there was this kid named Roger, and he had severe Downs. He was in a special program at our school. And this group of elite tormentors were throwing dirt in his eyes. And these are the same elite tormentors that all the teachers loved, all the parents loved. They were the perfect American teens. Be careful. If it looks perfect, it probably isn't. But I stopped them and rescued Roger. But later that day, I found a note in my locker with garbage in my locker that said, "Everybody hates you, retard lover. Go to another school." That night after school, all those kids ambushed me in the parking lot after a snowstorm and shoved snow down my throat and my ears and my shirt until I couldn't breathe. They didn't like the fact that I would sort of not follow the leader. I was very independent. By the time I was in high school, it had gotten to the point where the physical bullying ceased and then the psychological bullying became predominant, and that's the worst kind. I call it aggressive exclusion. And it's the worst kind of bullying because it makes the victim say to himself, "What's wrong with me?" Every day at lunch, there was this group of girls who let me sit with them, but I couldn't talk to them. That was the rule. And one day, this girl, Annette, whose table it was, jumped up and said, "Jody, you can't sit with us anymore. It's not like we hate you or anything, but everybody else does. And if you keep sitting with us, they're going to hate us too." And then I'll never forget it. I went from table to table in that crowded cafeteria begging people to let me sit with them. They shouted out nasty language at me. They spit at me. They shoved me, and eventually I ran out of that bathroom, or ran out of that cafeteria into the bathroom and cried. And here's the kicker. If any teacher would have gone to any of those kids and said, "Hey, you guys, what did you do to Jody? She was in the bathroom in tears," all those kids would have said, "Well, we didn't do anything," and they would have been telling the truth. And this is what I tell kids in my seminars, that bullying just isn't the mean things you do. It's all the nice things you never do. Letting someone sit alone at lunch every day, never inviting the same person over and over, always choosing the same person last when dividing into teams in class. Those forms of bullying are the most cruel because it makes the victim eventually loathe him or herself.
Jody Blanco, she is the author of two books. The first became a national bestseller, Please Stop Laughing at Me. Now her new book, Please Stop Laughing at Us, One Survivor's Extraordinary Quest to Prevent School Bullying. Jody Blanco offers free seminars around the country. Her website is attached to ours. So if you go to drshow.org, you will find a way to get to Jody Blanco. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. When you went to your parents and they told you that this was something you simply had to ignore. You tried to ignore it for a long mm-hmm. time. That didn't work. Did you ever go to a teacher and say, please help me?
Oh, I did. And what everyone needs to understand is that this was 30 years ago, before bullying even existed as a cultural term. Adults had the attitude that kids will be kids. Kids had the attitude that it's just joking around. And administrators found fault with the victims. And I remember going to my teachers, and my teacher's response was always, well, maybe if you didn't stick out so much, maybe if you made more of an effort to blend in. And looking back, I was insulted by that when I was a kid. Looking back, I'm horrified that a teacher would say that. And you know what's really interesting is that after my first book came out, it something weird happened, in that within 48 hours of release, it shot straight to the New York Times bestseller list. No one expected it. Goodness knows I didn't. And in that moment, thousands of kids started emailing me, begging me to come to their schools. So I packed a bag, literally, went to the airport and started traveling America's schools. And that's what I've been doing these past almost 6 years. And I've spoken to over 500,000 students, parents, and teachers. I've intervened on over a dozen bullying-related suicides. And I also averted a bomb threat and a knifing. And the fascinating thing I've discovered is that not that much has changed since I was a kid. The only thing that's different is that the tools of abuse are more sophisticated. 30 years ago, you could pass a nasty note about someone in the back of the class, and only that class saw it. Now you could post it on a blog, you could email blast it to an entire school. And I still come across teachers in the school system who still believe that it is just kids being kids. There are teachers and administrators who care so much.
Short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Jody Blanco is with me. We're talking about really a devastating subject for young people, and that is bullying. Jody has written now two books, the first titled Please Stop Laughing at Me, the second Please Stop Laughing at Us, One Survivor's Extraordinary Quest to Prevent School Bullying. You can go to her website from our website at drshow.org. You will find how much Jody has done to try to prevent this horrible exercise that does go on throughout schools, I'm sure, not only in this country, perhaps even around the world. Jody, you're a lovely young woman.
Thank you.
You are a mixture of an exotic, two races. Mm-hmm. And I find myself just so touched by your story, so moved by your story. And all the time, I say to myself, I was so wrapped up in what you were saying, I didn't even notice the clock. Why you? Why you? Why you?
You know, it's interesting. I think the passion with which you ask that question, I can only imagine how many parents are listening to us right now asking the same question as passionately of their own children. And I have the answer. The answer is, we're the ancient child. The victim of bullying is typically the kid who's like an old soul trapped in a young body. They're usually more socially and intellectually mature than their peers. They have like this little tiny adult inside them that makes them more morally and even more moral than their peers and more empathetic. It's like for some reason, the compassion muscle inside them grew faster than their other muscles. And so if they're with a group of kids, they desperately want to be accepted by that group. But if one of the kids in that clique starts to pick on the chubby girl, the ancient child can't participate. I remember vividly being in school, and I'd say I was about freshman year of high school, sophomore in high school, and I remember this group of kids that I desperately wanted to be accepted by. They were the kids that all the parents loved because they participated in sports. All the other kids looked up to them. I wanted them to like me, but they were constantly making fun of the disenfranchised at the school. They would tease them. They would spit at them. And one day they said, "Come on, Jody, you don't like Kathy." And I knew that was my moment of truth. I knew that if I made fun of Kathy, I would gain acceptance into their elite crowd. But I also knew that I couldn't do it because I still had to look myself in the mirror. And of course I said, "Why are you guys being so mean to Kathy? What's wrong with you? Come on, Kathy, come to my house." That was the beginning of the end for me. And the compassionate, mature, sensitive child pays a dear price in our school system because we're not culturally trained to appreciate this child. They're sort of misunderstood. And that's why when I go into schools across America, I have to do my program. My program is three-pronged, and there's a reason. My student presentation, my primary message to kids is it's not just joking around. You are damaging each other for life. And that bullying isn't just the acts of cruelty, but the omission of compassion. And that if you are targeted, there's nothing wrong with you. It's everything that's right about you that makes you stand apart. And I actually, Diane, reenact key scenes from my youth in front of thousands of kids. And it's horrible. I have to relive all that pain and humiliation in front of thousands of strange kids every week, every day. And I even got diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of what happened to me in school. But the reason I do it is because I don't want one other kid going through what I did.
Here's an email from the Reverend Ruth Garwood in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, who says, "Please keep in mind many children are bullied because they are perceived to be lesbian, gay, or transgender. This has as much or more to do with sexism and heterosexism than does the old soul rationale. It has meant violence against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender."
Well, let me address that, Reverend. First of all, I think you bring up a wonderful point. And I've worked with many, many transgendered students and thousands of gay and lesbian students, all of whom have been mercilessly persecuted. And I agree that their sexual orientation can make them a target. But they, in all of my experience working with transgendered students, gay and lesbian students, most of them, if not all of them, are themselves ancient children. Because when you have somebody who is willing to take on society, take on the world, take on misinformation, take on the prejudice of others, to be true to their own souls and true to their own sexuality at such a young age. You tell me that it's not an ancient child who has that kind of courage. So in addition to already being overtly targeted for their sexual orientation, they themselves inside feel different doubly. They feel different because of their sexual orientation, but that persecution makes them an ancient child, makes them more sensitive towards others, makes them more compassionate, makes them more courageous, forces them to be more socially mature, and they feel different for those reasons too. So I think, Reverend, we're actually in compelling agreement with one another on that issue.
Jody, what do you tell students when you go to high schools and many of them probably sit very quietly and attentively listening? What do you tell them to do when they feel they are the object of bullying?
Well, what I tell them is that you can't ignore someone who's trying to decimate your self-esteem and who's breaking your spirit, that you should never ignore that. And I encourage them to look their tormentors in the eye, show no emotion, and tell them to stop. I encourage them to turn to an authority figure, an adult that they can respect and feel comfortable with. And here's the most important bit of advice I give them. It saved my life, and it saved tens of thousands of kids, and it's just common sense, which we know isn't very common anymore. School doesn't have to be your whole life. I know it feels like a child's whole life, but it doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be, because the minute you feel that school is your whole life, you're vulnerable on both sides of the coin. And what I tell kids who are being bullied, the truth is that if you're an outcast, if you are the school outcast like I was, sometimes, particularly if it's a smaller school, that stigma is very difficult to undo unless you have a transformation inside. And I tell kids, you need a social life. You need friends. School doesn't have to be your whole life. Seek an interim social life. Go one town over. Call the Park District, the Y or Community Center, the local library, and the Chamber of Commerce, and ask them if they have any organized activities for kids, and then join one of those activities. You're going to achieve two things. One, you'll make new friends. And on the days when school is lonely and you can't take it anymore, you have these new friendships in this activity to look forward to.
What about church?
Church is another good one, too. But it's very, very important that you do it one town over. Because if you do it in the town where you go to school or where you live, all you're going to be doing is an outside activity with your schoolmates who have already stigmatized you. You need to meet new faces, fresh faces, and start fresh in a new environment. And these new friendships will also give you confidence. And the more confident you become, the more you radiate that sort of non-victim kind of karma. You'll radiate a strength.
Here's an email from Chris who says, what happens to bullies when they grow up?
Chris, great question. Well, I think that one of the fundamental principles here is that most bullies don't realize they're bullies. There are two kinds of bullies. The bully who steals everybody's lunch money and who picks on everybody isn't doing any long-term psychological damage to anyone because he's picking on everyone indiscriminately, and in fact, he himself is the outcast. It's when a group of students, whom I've referred to before as elite tormentors, the members of the cool crowd who exclude on purpose, it's when they single out someone who's different for whatever reason, like an ancient child or like a gay or lesbian student or the overweight student, and they make that child's life a subtle living hell. That's the kind of abuse that causes long-term damage. But the people doing that kind of abuse when they're kids, they don't realize. In their minds, it's just joking around. So when they grow up, in their heads, they weren't bullies. They were just kids being kids.
But does that kind of behavior continue?
It continues because it's generational. It's hereditary because then when their kids go to school, they're going with the same lack of compassion. I'll give you a quick anecdote. I mean, a quick story. I went to my high school reunion. I was terrified to go. And I went right after I finished my first book, so all those thoughts were fresh in my mind. And long story short, that night, many of the kids who tormented me actually apologized for hurting me. And the high school heartthrob, who I fantasized about since the fifth grade, took one look at me, and we were married 2 years later. Now, these bullies who tormented me now work with me in my anti-bullying efforts. Every couple of months, we'll have dinner, and we talk about how they abused me, how I responded, and if I would have responded differently, how it would have affected the dynamic. And Chris, we talk about this very, very issue. Most of these people have grown up to be warm, caring, loving adults, but many of them struggle with their own children. Half of them, they have kids who are getting bullied. The other half, they have kids who are the bullies. And it's the flip side of the same coin, because in both cases, in their heads, it's still kids being kids.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Here's an email from Fran in Hudson, Ohio, who says, while I was a young girl teased in school, I am well aware of the long-term effects of this behavior. I'm now 50 years old. As I raise my son, who's now 11, I've told him since he was 5 years old that if I ever hear of his participating in teasing or bullying, there will be consequences. What about parents who do not find teasing or bullying to be bad behavior? How can parents' attitudes be changed? Parents really are the ones to address.
Well, I think that's a wonderful email. Number one, she touches on something that I think is critical, and that's the whole adult survivor of peer abuse. This was a previously unrecognized audience before I started my crusade, and they didn't even recognize themselves. And now that I've been doing this, they're sort of coming forward, like in this email just a moment ago. And so I celebrate her courage in sending that email. And to answer her question, this is one of the primary reasons that when I go into communities, I find I have to exhaust myself, because I do the students in the morning, teachers in the afternoon, and parent-family seminar at night to educate the parents. And the best thing I can tell you about parents is, number one, any parent you meet, whatever parent you come across, tell them, don't tell your child to ignore the bully and walk away, or they're just jealous. Kids know these are cliches. It's not a comfort, and it can trigger even worse feelings of hopelessness in your child. Two, tell parents, it's not just joking around. It's not kids being kids. It's kids being cruel, and there's a difference. Three, encourage parents that if their children aren't getting the social outlet they need through school and through school friends, they need to find an alternative social outlet one town over, and encourage the parents to nurture that social outlet. Meet the other parents whose kids are involved in this activity. Invite them over for a barbecue. Nurture this new social nucleus for your child. The best thing you can do to educate the parents in your immediate world, wherever you live, is to communicate over and over. It's not just joking around.
When a parent says, it's just something you need to ignore, mm-hmm. What does that do to the relationship between the parent and child?
It decimates it. When my parents used to tell me that, and I've spoken to tens of thousands of bullying victims whose parents tell them the same thing, this is what goes through our heads. I am now the voice of the bully child. One, not only does my mom think it's okay that my self-esteem is being destroyed and my spirit's being broken, that she's going to ignore it, she even wants me to ignore it too. Number two, I know that it's not going to work, and it's only going to make the mean kids meaner, because they're going to try harder to get my attention and to hurt me. And three, I guess my parents just want me to ignore all my problems. It makes me feel like my parents are lazy and don't care because not only are they going to ignore it, they want me to ignore it too. And if you're a parent and you're listening, that is not what you say to a child. What you should say, number one, I don't know how you feel. I can't imagine what you're going through. It must be awful. Then say to them, let's talk about an action that we can take together today towards solving this challenge that you're facing. Number three, get on the internet or the phone, go one town over, contact the Park District, Chamber of Commerce, library, or church, and get an activity because your child, if they're being bullied, is bleeding.
Of course, there was that recent situation where a parent actually participated in harassing another young woman via the internet, which I think shocked many people into the realization that bullying does not stop with teenage behavior. We're going to take just a short break. When we come back, it's time for us to hear your stories. We'll open the phones, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. By the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. By Jeffrey Kenner, in appreciation of NPR's international coverage and its foreign correspondents. And by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Carole King talks about her many achievements in recording, songwriting, and activism, including her Grammy Awards, her work on behalf of environmental causes, and political candidates. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. If you've just joined us, Jody Blanco is my guest. She's written and spoken extensively about a subject that troubles many, many children and parents as well, bullying. She initially wrote a book that became a national bestseller titled Please Stop Laughing at Me, One Woman's Inspirational Story. Now she's written, Please Stop Laughing at Us, One Survivor's Extraordinary Quest to Prevent School Bullying. She's been traveling all over the country, and she does so visiting schools, speaking to parents, speaking to students, teachers. She does these seminars free of charge. Her website can be found attached to ours at drshow.org. We're going to open the phones now first to Linda in Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning to you.
Morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I was just calling in to say that I had been a victim when I was in school roughly the first 8 years every day, regardless of every day, in school by the same boy. He relentlessly sought me out. He would come over to me. He followed me. My parents couldn't stop him. His parents couldn't stop him. The teachers, our classmates, he just followed me everywhere I went. And until he got his reaction, until he made me miserable that day, he was never happy. And it wasn't until about 8 years, I hit the point where I stood in the middle of the school bus while it was moving and simply went ballistic. I screamed and shook and could not be calmed down. He never came near me again. He never spoke to me. He avoided me down hallways. And yet to this day, you can tell, it still hits me. It's been over 40 years. And yet I still look for him, that I think he's going to be lurking, ready to pounce again. And I don't think parents really understand what it's like when a kid goes through that relentlessly, day after day, what it does to them.
Linda, I'm sorry for your experiences, and I'm sure there are many others out there who feel your pain.
Linda, I can so identify with what you're going through, because here I am 30 years later since I was in school too, and when I go into these schools and give these talks, I literally feel the same fear standing in a gym that I used to feel when I was 15 and 16. And even though I know the bullies are adults and in a different state when I'm speaking out of town, there's that part of me that's still afraid to be in the bathroom alone. And all I can say is that I think you're heroic to call. And the advice that I would give you, that I do for myself, and that I give all adult survivors of peer abuse, number one, don't let anybody ever say to you, come on, just get over it. That happened when you were a kid, because we can't get over it. And number two, at some point, it certainly helped me. You might want to consider talking to somebody about it, a therapist, because I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder when I was writing the first book, because I was getting night terrors and night sweats. We adult survivors of peer abuse are like a ghostly population among the mainstream. And until we start speaking about what we went through and how it hurt us, we will never really recover. And I think you are heroic, and I am humbled that you called in here today.
Thank you, Linda. And now to Prescott, Arizona. Good morning, Eric.
Yeah, good morning. I'm a 50-year-old single parent of a 7-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl. My 9-year-old girl reported to me that my 7-year-old son was being bullied on the bus. I think myself, my first reaction was to overreact. I mean, I wanted to go and do some bullying myself because, you know, nobody messes with your child. Nobody messes with my kid. I'm going to go get this person and get that person. But I had to take a step back and say, okay, what's the next indicated step here that I need to do? And it was making a couple of calls to the school, you know, and luckily in my case, it was taken care of immediately. But there probably is a tendency for parents to overreact as well, don't you think?
Oh, hi. It's Eric, right? Yes, Eric. You know what, though? I have dealt with so many thousands of parents throughout the country, parents of bullies and of victims. And I'll tell you something. I'll take the loving parent who overreacts any time over the parent who dismisses it. And my advice for parents who tend to overreact is that the danger there is that you can put the school or the parents of the bullies on the defensive, and they will dig their heels in against you. And I think that what you did was wonderful, and I think you solved the problem. If there are any parents out there who are struggling with this issue, I think the first thing you need to consider is to approach it from a non-offensive point of view. Call the school and say, my child is having some challenges. Let's work together. If you talk to the parents of the bullies, say, hi, We have something in common. We both love our kids, and our kids seem to be struggling a little bit. Let's get together and talk about how we can both help our children. Because if you approach it from that perspective, you're more likely to get the support you need on both ends.
Good advice. Here's an email, and I'll read the last line first. Please don't use my name or town on air. It would hurt my mom too much. I know she's listening, too. She says, I was the chubby girl you referred to when you said the bullied kids learned to loathe themselves. I started crying my eyes out. I've often looked back on what impact different experiences in life have had on me, but the truth is, in those few words, are very, very powerful. At 45 years old, you just put the reality square in front of me. I today still loathe myself and my body.
Wow. Since we're being really honest, and since you didn't give us a name, I'm going to call you my kindred spirit. And since we are kindred spirits, I will tell you that it's a struggle for me too. I so identify with your heart, and I wish I could just beam myself to where you are and wrap my arms around you, and we could both have a good cry. Because even at 40, I'm 44, and there are nights when I still feel like I'm a mistake. Someone wrote in my yearbook, my last day of high school, the F word, you, the B word, exclamation, all spelled out. Everybody hates you and always will. You're God's worst mistake. And there are days when I'm tired from touring and I'm raw from reliving all this rejection on stage all day long that I still think I'm a mistake and I have to talk myself out of it. And all I can tell you is whoever emailed that poignant email, find a counselor or a therapist that you can talk this out with and make sure that they take this seriously. Also, reach out to the friends and loved ones in your life. Tell them this still affects you. Tell them it still impacts you and ask for their support and affirmation of your inner and outer beauty. But believe me, there are nights that I shiver in front of the mirror and say, I'm still a mistake. We will struggle with that always. Parents, it's not just joking around. If you are listening to this show, we are in our 40s and we are still suffering because of what happened to us at the hands of our peers. Don't let your children hurt others. Pay attention.
What do you tell teachers?
Well, the primary thing I tell teachers, the same thing I tell parents, that you can't tell your students to ignore the bullies or they're just jealous, it won't work. But a large message I communicate to teachers is that it's our system that's the problem. Traditional punishment doesn't work. It only makes an angry kid angrier. When that angry kid wants to take out that extra angst, they're not going to take it out in the direction of the popular kids or their friends. It's too much of a risk. They'll take it out in the direction of the outcast, the expendable person. And when that outcast finally snaps, everybody's scratching their heads saying gun control is the issue. It's our system of punishment. We need to supplement it with something I call compassionate discipline. For example, I had mentioned earlier in the show about how a group of kids ambushed me after school in the parking lot and attacked me because I had defended a down student earlier in the day. Now, the ringleader was given a 10-day at-home suspension. The other kids were given in-school suspensions. Now, I never noticed it, but when I got back to school, that ringleader was 10 pounds lighter. I never noticed. I found out years later when I was having dinner with some of the ex-bullies analyzing our past that at the time, that kid's father had lost his job, and he had six siblings, and they were struggling, they were starving. He didn't attack me because he hated me. He didn't attack my friend Roger with Downs because he hated him. We were socially expendable, and the poor kid was hungry. And what did that clueless principal do? Didn't ask any questions, didn't ask anything, just sentenced him to 10 days at home, where he lost more weight. And when he came back to school after that suspension, he waited for me behind the bushes one day and then pushed me into moving traffic. So what I tell teachers is this is what that principal or the teacher should have done. They should have gotten this kid, his name was Jerry, and said, Jerry, you're a good kid. We love you. What's wrong, son? They should have asked him what was wrong, helped his family get food, and then required him to volunteer with a special ed department during his study hall every day so we could learn firsthand why I loved Roger in the first place. Empathy deficit disorder. Bullies suffer from something I've coined, empathy deficit disorder. We need to create more compassionate, innovative forms of discipline that help kids access their empathy like a muscle and develop it instead of atrophying that muscle with traditional punishment.
Here's a caller in New York City. Good morning, Julie.
Hi. I was bullied. First of all, I want to commend your efforts. Second of all, I was bullied all throughout middle school, particularly around eighth grade. It was really horrible. I was bullied by my friends or groups like the, I guess, I was in what you might call the popular group. And I was really bullied by my friends. Like, I would go into school every day unaware of whether or not I was going to be accepted that day. At the end of the day, I was always friends with them, and it wasn't a question. But I mean, it was so frightening. Like, the psychological abuse was so horrible that to say, I definitely have some issues with that. And I was just wondering how you deal with sort of in-group bullying and also whether or not you find yourself falling back into that role at all.
And before you respond, Jody, let me just remind you at 6 minutes before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. The Canadian writer Margaret Atwood wrote a brilliant book about this kind of in-group bullying called Cat's Eye, and I would highly recommend it. I'm sure you have some response, Jody.
Yes, absolutely, and it's Julie, correct? Julie, first of all, I'm right there with you, and I know that feeling. And the kind of bullying you're talking about, I've actually coined a term for. I call it arbitrary exclusion. And it's typically perpetrated by girls, and it's typically perpetrated by elite tormentor females. And there's been a tremendous rise in this particular brand of peer abuse.
Why?
Over the past 5 to 10 years. Because I think that kids are forced to deal with so much more stimuli than they ever were before, so many more distractions. And so click staying together, they have more challenges because they're distracted and tempted by more. So the methods with which to keep your click together have become more intense and more insidious. And one of the ways you deal with that in-group fighting, arbitrary exclusion, and it's the most popular form of bullying among girls that I see in schools today, is where you'll be in a clique just like you described, Julie, and all of a sudden somebody in the clique will decide they don't want you in that clique anymore, and they'll get everybody to turn against you, and you won't even have done anything. The way you deal with it is this. When you're with the entire clique together, you've got to look at all of them, and you've got to confront it, and you've got to say, look, I really value all of your friendships, and I really care about you guys. Why are you doing this? What have I done to trigger this kind of betrayal? And you've got to confront them and force them to be honest. If you're too afraid or if you're shy, and let's say that that's not something you could do, then write a letter saying, I'm writing this to everybody, and address it to everyone and give everyone that letter. Because a lot of times, the other members of the clique will give in to a ringleader who's trying to push you out, and they don't realize how much it's hurting you. And unless you tell them how much it's hurting you, you will never, ever be able to effectively deal with it. The third option is to find one friend within the clique that you do trust, whose confidence you still have, and turn to that person and say, can you please help me communicate with the rest of our friends and get to the root of why this is happening and stop it? Those are the three primary options for addressing arbitrary exclusion.
Jody Blanco, her latest book is titled Please Stop Laughing at Us, One Survivor's Extraordinary Quest to Prevent School Bullying. If you wish to go to drshow.org, you'll find a link to her website. She lectures about bullying to students, teachers, parents all over the country. Jody, thank you for your work, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.